Welcome to How to Money. I'm Joel.
And I'm Matt.
And today we're discussing scraping by on 500K, scammer magnets, and the cure for high gas prices.
That is right. This is our Friday Flight, where we're going to tackle some different headlines that we've come across this week, and we're going to specifically talk about how they pertain to our money. We've got a lot of good ones this week, but before we get to all that, Joel, I know you wanted to talk about your new most favorite show, Lula Rich.
So, no, not my favorite show, but it was like I downloaded a couple episodes to watch on our recent flight to Austin.
I saw you watching those, yeah. Getting a feel for all the different leggings that are out there, all the different patterns.
I want all the patterns, Matt.
You do like color.
I'm now collecting LuLaRoe leggings, so I'm probably going to look on eBay, see what I can get. But no, not exactly. it's interesting, though. There was some chatter in the Facebook group as well about this docuseries, and I think it was enlightening on a few levels. One, just about this multi-level marketing company, this pyramid scheme, as it turns out, which we have talked about actually back in episode 254, and we specifically called out LuLaRoe as a pyramid scheme and said that people should avoid it at all costs. And there are other companies like this taking this tactic where they might sell a product, but the main way that people that work for the company make money is by recruiting other people underneath them. And so it was just kind of like a because it had such a cultural influence, because at one point I think they had 90,000, mostly women, selling these leggings to each other around the country.
So many folks.
There are tens and tens of thousands of women who lost tens of thousands of dollars in this enterprise, and only a very, very small few made big money. And so, yeah, I don't know. If you want to see what the inside of a pyramid scheme looks like, this is a fascinating peek inside, peek under the door. And the founders in particular, they hired all their family members. They all got rich too. They got jobs inside of LuLaRoe. Right. And it's one of those things where basically everybody else loses out.
Well, I'm glad to see someone like Amazon kind of running with this and exposing more light basically on this kind of situation, because the more folks who are aware that this exists, not just specifically with LuLaRoe, but certainly other MLMs, multi-level marketing companies that are going to, that we're going to see in the future, this isn't a brand new model, right? Like, this is something we have seen before, but this is just the most recent manifestation of it. And plus the ability to call it Lula Rich is it goes a long way.
That's good. And all the imagery they could use because of legging patterns and stuff.
A lot of personalities, I'm sure, of folks who they can interview.
Exactly, exactly. So it's worth watching if that's something you're interested in. And I think you'll begin to recognize, too, the patterns that are involved in a pyramid scheme, so that hopefully you never sign up to work for one, because it's a losing proposition.
That's right. Let's go ahead and get to our Friday Flight then. While we're talking about retail and consumption, Salesforce, they estimate that your holiday gifts could cost as much as 20% more this year. Joel, you saw an increase of your vanity in your bathroom that's going to be 20% more expensive.
Exactly.
Due specifically to shipping costs.
I was like, Salesforce, how do you know what I'm buying and how much it costs?
they got you pegged. That is, of course, an awful thing, the fact that we're all going to be likely spending more money on the holidays. But about a month ago, actually, we mentioned that you'll want to start shopping earlier for gifts that you're planning to give. The shipping delays, overseas factory shutdowns, these are all contributing to the mess that is the retail industry right now. And so all signs are kind of continuing to point, you know, to the fact that these are going to be issues that will continue to linger. And the longer that you wait, you know, the more prices are likely going to rise, the less likely that the items that you're looking for will actually be on the shelf. Joel, I saw an item recently that I came across that I thought, well, first of all, are you and me, are we going to have like a company Christmas party again this year?
I hope so.
I hope so too. But I don't.
We better. Why am I working here? I'm quitting, actually, if we don't have one. I'm out.
We didn't give each other gifts last year, but I came across something recently.
We gave each other the gift of a ribeye,
of a really good ribeye. The gifts of delicious steak. It was amazing. But I recently came across something online, and as soon as I saw it, it just screamed Joel at me. So I better go ahead and put that order in now if that's going to be something that we're going to do, a little gift exchange.
Yeah, well, and before the price rises, too.
Exactly.
I think, Matt, we're seeing prices rising already, right? We've talked about inflation quite a bit on these Friday Flight episodes, and Dollar Tree actually is raising its prices. This is definitely a harbinger of things to come. It used to be the case that you could go to Dollar Tree in particular, and you could buy something, everything, for a dollar.
Yeah.
Other dollar stores kind of do things differently, but Dollar Tree was this last haven where everything that they sold was a dollar. But now, pretty soon, you're going to be able to you're going to be paying $1.25 or $1.50, maybe more, for certain items in their stores. And I think it makes sense, right? Like, Dollar Tree had to do this, or they were going to be out of business with, like, inflation, shipping issues, wage increases, all of these things hitting them at once.
Yeah, dollar and 50 cents tree doesn't quite have the same ring to it, though,
right?
Does it?
It's exactly.
Not nearly as catchy.
No, I don't think they have to change their name because they do that. But yeah, you better be prepared when you walk through the front doors. It's not going to be the same. But yeah, and we talked about dollar stores. We talked about how we feel about them a while back. We're not really big fans, but yeah, suffice it to say that they're not great for the communities they exist in. The items that they sell often go above and beyond affordable. They're actually just cheap, and often because
sure.
They're poorly made. They don't provide much in the way of value. So yeah, and if you think we're wrong, if you are a dollar store fanatic, like, we'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line. Let us know why you like dollar stores. But for us, they're not our style. We don't encourage people to shop at dollar stores. We do think most of the time that's a cheap, not frugal move.
Yeah, there are definitely some folks out there who love dollar stores. They are just not for us. And, you know, honestly, dude, as we are talking about kind of shopping and retail, I think it'll be really interesting to see how big of a deal Black Friday is going to be this year. You know, like, will the discounts be as big as they typically are? I feel like in general, too, Black Friday has also gotten smaller because of the multiple days worth of sales that we typically see with, like, Cyber Monday and the different sales that different companies tend to have.
Stretched out over a bigger period as opposed to one specific day.
Exactly. But just with the supply issues, man, my guess is that retailers are going to be less likely to provide some of these amazing discounts because of the rising costs that they face. And so our thoughts, don't expect that you'll pay a ton less if you continue to wait, if you want to hold out for the big sales coming up. And, you know, as we said a few weeks ago, some of the items on your wish list might be gone completely if you're going to wait too last minute with your shopping. The sooner, the better that you get started on that. And also, too, it's worth pointing out that, you know, you brought this up on an episode not too long ago, but where do you draw the line? Is it okay to buy used gifts? And we feel like there's no shame in that game.
Yeah, I think it's okay personally to buy used as long as it's in good condition and it's the item that somebody actually wants. I don't think that's out of bounds. And apparently, 1 billion other people agree with me because...
That's a lot of people.
I've got a big consensus here, Matt, and I did not take any personal surveys or anything like that, but it turns out that's how many people actually are on Facebook Marketplace these days. I kind of thought that was a crazy number. Apparently, 60% of the world's population that is internet connected is on Facebook, and then a good majority of those people...
That is mind-blowing,
right,
to be honest.
Use Marketplace. That is nuts,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And so, yeah, I've done a decent amount of selling and buying there over the years. And for me, it's supplanted Craigslist in my mind for ease of use.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, it's so much easier to take the photos, upload them to Facebook, and I feel like that's where most of the buyers are, too. They're on Facebook, and that's where I am when I'm buying
stuff.
Yeah,
nobody's on Craigslist anymore, man. Right. Like, it's just gotten way too sketchy over there, so.
And, it used to be good. I want to show, because I feel like Craigslist was a revolution when it came to the classifieds industry, right? Before Craigslist, it was like, you had to pay money to put it in a newspaper, and Craigslist like totally changed the game. So mad props to Craigslist, even though I think Facebook Marketplace is, of course, better.
Yeah.
But ProPublica did an investigation, and they found that Facebook Marketplace has now become a magnet for scammers. That's their words. And they dug deep. They identified thousands of listings and profiles in the marketplace that violate Facebook guidelines. So Facebook has these guidelines and people are like skirting them, and Facebook is letting it go. Apparently their algorithms and the incredibly small staff that they have dedicated to this task, well, they're trying to play whack-a-mole, but they're missing. They're swinging and missing so much of the time. And yeah, this news, Matt, comes at a bad time for Facebook with this, like, the recent whistleblower revelations from a former employee about Facebook's inability to curb the spread of misinformation on its platform. You know, 60 Minutes ran that piece just this past weekend, and Facebook is not looking so hot right now.
Yeah, and there are those new reports too that show that Facebook and Instagram also appear to be the big reason for the rise of depression among young folks. But when it comes to, you know, the marketplace, here's what we would recommend. Always be careful when you're going to meet someone to buy or to sell an item especially electronics. I feel like those tend to be the hot items, the items that are in demand that folks are willing to scam or even hurt others in order to get their hands on them. The worst crimes tend to happen around smartphones and gaming console sales. And you should also tread lightly when it comes to car listings on the site. Not only is it popular items that folks are looking to take advantage of, but anytime there is a large dollar amount where a scammer has the ability to walk away with a lot of your money, watch out for those scenarios. Fraud and crime are far less likely to happen when someone's just selling something really affordable, like a $10 plant. And so if the price is too good to be true, it probably is. And for those high dollar items, be sure to meet in well-lit areas, preferably in front of a police station. But a reminder for folks, more shady folks are popping up on the platform, and there is this just shady and criminal activity that we're seeing is on the rise. Be careful out there. It's another reason, too, why I'm such a huge fan of eBay. You don't have to deal with people in person. You've got your profile. You've got the different ratings. You know the folks who are good players, good actors on the site. And that platform allows you to avoid a lot of that hassle.
Yeah, and you know, Facebook was, everyone thought it was going to be more safe than Craigslist because Craigslist was completely anonymous and Facebook is at least attached to a profile, but there are all sorts of ways around that. And a lot of scammers are abusing the platform. And yeah, you got to be careful because it could lead to the loss of your money, but it could lead to something even worse potentially in the worst scenarios. But Matt, let's move on. Let's talk about gas prices for a second. Anybody who's paying attention, and I am more and more now because I don't have an electric vehicle these days, has noticed that gas prices have been on the rise. We're near 6-year highs, and the average price nationwide is literally a dollar more a gallon than it was a year ago. And that's just like, that's going to impact your budget if that's the case. And so, yeah, this is good to know, right? But the question is, I guess, does that cause you to want to drive less than you normally would? We would say that it should. There are obviously some places that we just have to be, whether it's getting to work or taking some time off and taking a little vacation, we got to drive there. Most of us aren't able to cut cars out of our life completely. But when you take a look at the data, gasoline is one of those inelastic products where the price doesn't really have much of an impact on demand. But that's partly due to the relatively small fluctuations in gas prices. It's like a frog in boiling water scenario, where as the price slowly increases over time, we just get accustomed to paying more for it. But we think a thoughtful mental exercise is to imagine if the price of gas doubled overnight, or let's say it shot up to $10 a gallon, which is probably what it's what it is in California, is my guess. Gas prices always more expensive there. But there's probably a good chance, Matt, if gas prices got to that point, you and I would both change our behavior a little bit, right? There'd be some changes to our gas consumption, to some of the trips that we take. And this is particularly true because when you consider the research, it shows that 48%, almost half of all car trips in the most congested U.S. cities are less than 3 miles in length. That's a really bikeable distance.
Totally.
So a lot of people really could, for many of their trips, change how they do them. And so, yeah, while we hope gas prices don't continue to rise because it sucks for, yeah, your personal finances, it's worth it to think through what changes you can make now with how you get around town so that you can be in your car less and paying less overall in fuel costs.
Yeah, it really feels like that. It wouldn't take much to cause us to reevaluate our our transportation needs and what we're willing to spend. And kind of on that note, there was a great article in Axios this week about the rising use of e-bikes in cities. E-bike sales are up 240% in a 2-year period, which is a massive return.
Love hearing that.
Were you invested in e-bikes?
Yeah. There's a stock ticker for e-bikes.
Dang it. Oh.
Many bike sharing programs are actually gravitating towards e-bikes as well. Instead of just the standard bicycle, folks are like, oh, wow, e-bikes are incredible. They allow you to get there without being completely drenched in sweat if it's the summer. And we think this is great news as well. In general, we're biking evangelists and we're always trying to spread the good word. And we think that e-bikes make a heck of a lot of sense for a lot of folks. And we want to encourage more How to Money listeners to ditch their car and hop on a bike whenever possible. But there is a problem, and that's that most of our cities weren't built with bikers in mind. And so as transportation tastes and, you know, demand, as that changes, it's time to make our streets more relevant to the ways that people are actually using them. And that means by being less car-centric. That's also going to mean for you probably to get more involved, like on a civic level. Here in Atlanta, we're fans of and we support the Atlanta Bicycle Coalition as they're on a mission to create safer streets. So if this sounds like something that you could get behind, look and see if there's a local organization that you can literally get behind and support with your time and with your money as well.
Yeah, the more bikes that are on the street, like the more we get noticed from a city planning standpoint. And so it's important to have your voice heard. It's important to be on your bike more.
It's called critical mass.
Yeah, and it's going to save you some money on those gas costs. So we're never, ever going to stop talking about how great bikes are. So if you're tired of it, sorry about that. It's going to continue. But we've got more stories to get to, Matt, including one about investing app Robinhood going on a tour of colleges around the country. That's not good news. We'll get to that right after this.
We are back, and we'll get to that Robinhood story here, Joel, that you mentioned in a second. But first, we've got our ludicrous headline of the week. And this one came from The Atlantic, and it was titled, $350,000 a year and just getting by.
Ouch. Must be tough to be in that tax bracket, right?
Oh, man. This article is about why financial confessionals online have gone viral. You know, we've all seen those articles pop up on like social media or on various money sites where, you know, there's a couple. They're making $250,000 and are somehow living paycheck to paycheck. And so
that's when I break out the world's tiniest violin.
So, like, honestly, what does this say about the majority of Americans who actually make way less than that but actually have their finances in shape? You know, they've got their stuff in order. And then some of these folks will proceed to lay out their budget, and you realize that for them, like, you know, paycheck to paycheck for these wealthy folks, it means taking, let's see, an awesome vacation, contributing a ton to savings, to retirement, plus putting away money for like their kids' college. So, yeah, sorry to tell you, but that's actually not the definition of living paycheck to paycheck. That's called living a normal life. I will say, though, it's true that where you live matters, like your location matters, because obviously, you know, $100,000 in San Francisco or New York versus $100,000 in Jackson, Mississippi, or in Tulsa, Oklahoma. These are completely different scenarios. But if you're saving and you're investing, you definitely shouldn't compare yourself to folks who are actually living paycheck to paycheck. I think there's actually something else at play here, not that these folks are barely just scraping by.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to see how they feel that way, even though that's not actually the case. And right. So I thought the most fascinating part of this piece, Matt, had to do with the psychological ramifications of households where both partners are working really demanding jobs. And there was this one quote that really stuck out to me, and here it goes. The rise of the high-octane couple has increased this sense of generalized household stress, which no amount of money can buy you out of. So in my estimation, it's not necessarily a lack of money for many of these couples. Like, they've got enough money on hand.
Yeah.
It's the reality that they're working too much and they're super stressed out because of it. And then they use money to make their lives easier at every turn. They've got enough money coming in and they're like funneling it straight out, hiring people to mow their lawn, going out to eat more, taking better vacations, hiring more childcare. And there's nothing wrong with that if that's the kind of life that you want to live. But yeah, I don't know. I tend to agree that more couples are stressed out in general because work has become more and more central to so many people's lives. And I'm just putting this out there, but working less is an option for many of us. It's an option for many How to Money listeners if we make meaningful changes to our desires and to our budgets. And yeah, if you don't want to be stressed out, I'm not saying you can get there overnight, but there are a lot of changes that you can make so that it can be a reality that you don't have to work as much as you currently are. Just want to kind of point that out.
Well, it's funny because I feel like I'm normally the one who's like making the work less argument. And so I'll kind of take the other approach, which is that I mean, for a lot of folks, their ability to find like satisfaction and meaning within their work is really important. You know, for a lot of folks, that can be, I think, core to who they are. And I think that's fine as long as you can also prioritize your personal finances. And like you said, I think it is a psychological thing. I think it's a mindset problem because if it feels like you're floundering with when it comes to your money, like, it doesn't matter how much money you make, it's still not going to feel like you've got your act together. And so I think a lot of times for folks, maybe all of those vacations or all that additional time that they're using to go out to eat at restaurants, you know, maybe, like you said, maybe it does mean that we need to work a little bit less, because I believe that's also true. But like, we have 168 hours every single week. And I think so many individuals and couples could like carve out like 1 hour out of that entire week to have a snapshot of like what is going on with our money. And were they to do that, I think that they would be a lot less stressed. It makes me think of a teacher friend of mine who was just like, you know, when it comes to being a teacher, you just have to be like one step ahead of the kids. And so you've got these couples and they're basically one step behind. And so it feels like that they're always trying to catch up. It feels like that they never have a grasp on their money. But all you got to do is just be you know, one step ahead. Like for a teacher, you don't have to have your entire curriculum or whatever. What do you call it? Lesson plan.
Yeah.
You don't have to have that plan for the entire year, but you definitely need to have tomorrow's lesson plan figured out, right? And so with our money, I think like
if you don't, you're just putting on a movie.
Exactly. Or you're stressed while you're trying to wing it.
Right.
And with our money, I think we don't have to have our money figured out for the next several decades until the point of retirement. But like, it would be a really good idea if you had a budget, if you knew where your money was going this month. And so I couldn't agree with you more that I think it is more of it's not the money. It's just a psychological thing. It's a mental thing, and it's how we approach our money. And that's why we talk about money so much, because we want it to be a part of our day-to-day conversations.
Yeah. And if your income is that large, the amount of ground you can make up quickly is huge.
Oh my gosh.
So those people are actually in such a great position. Like they feel stressed out now, but in no time they can lick some of their biggest problems.
Yes.
If only you're right, they would give it the attention, the focus. 1 hour a week really is for
somebody.
And
that's a lot of time too. You know, I mean, like it wouldn't even take that long.
You're right.
But these folks,
eventually it won't take that long.
Yeah,
I think maybe initially
early
it will.
On.
But yeah, they'll get there and they'll be in a great position. I think most of our listeners are like, I don't make nearly that much.
Right.
And I don't feel sorry for them. And I agree with you. I don't feel sorry for them either.
But just think about, like you said, think about how much ground they'll be able to make up. Like at the end of the season, they're totally going to get the most improved award.
Right.
Because I bet, right, like they're just hemorrhaging money.
Yeah.
They've got a very leaky boat. But it's a nice boat and it goes really fast. And all they got to do is just plug some of those holes and they'll be cruising.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about that Robin Hood story. Robin Hood, as it turns out, is going on a college tour to recruit new customers. And the Wall Street Journal had an article, as long as some other publications this week. Robin Hood, as it turns out, is looking to kickstart a new trend. Except for it's not a new trend. It's actually the oldest trick in the book. This is what the credit card companies were doing on college campuses 15 years ago, right? And they were trying to get customers for life by signing up young teenagers for their products. Those teenagers ultimately didn't handle those credit cards well. And then, as it turns out, the Card Act of 2009 shut down that business model. But yeah, basically, just like credit cards, the Robinhood app can be a great tool. Like, we like credit cards, even though they can be used really poorly. We don't mind Robinhood as a platform. It's just the fact that so many people are using it poorly.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is lots of young investors are using this tool poorly and developing awful investing habits. And so I'm just nervous. I'm very nervous what Robinhood visiting dozens of campuses and attempting to get more and more people to sign up, what that means for their investing future. A lot of people, their initiation should be, we would think, through a company like Vanguard or Fidelity, and not hopefully the Robinhood investing app.
Yeah, and then on top of that, Robinhood's giving out prize money to some big winners, hoping that these college students with very little money will be excited enough to start investing at least some of what they do have.
Oh, that's free pizza for a year. All right.
It's like they're not giving out actual pizza anymore, but at least they're giving us the money to be able to do whatever we want with. And as How to Money listeners know, you know, we're fans of investing for the future. That's how you build wealth. And the earlier you get started, the better. And so I love the idea that there are college students who are going to start investing now, but Robinhood doesn't offer those tax advantage accounts on their platform, and that is a big deal to us. And so, you know, the free, you know, $15 that Robinhood is handing out to students who sign up, like that just might be the worst free gift you've ever been given. If it causes you to be a day trader, if it causes you to be a speculator instead of opting to be a long-term buy and hold investor, that is what we want to see college students doing. And until Robinhood starts encouraging that type of behavior, we're going to be critics.
Yeah, and the fact that they don't have access to tax advantage accounts is huge, because most of those college students would do really well if they started investing in a Roth IRA. But if those are the best years to invest in that vehicle. And if you miss out on that early and you're doing tax advantaged accounts and you're doing brokerage accounts instead, you're going to lose a lot of those gains to taxes, whereas in a Roth, you otherwise wouldn't.
That's right.
But let's move on, Matt. Let's talk about credit scores for a second. It turns out, I knew it was happening, but I didn't realize how pervasive the problem was. Some companies are still charging people for credit scores, for access to your credit score.
I mean, if people are going to pay, why not continue to charge?
It's kind of like, I don't know.
That's what they're saying.
Right. I remember.
I'm not saying that.
No. I remember a few years ago, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago, and I read that like a million people were still paying AOL for an account. And it's like, what, really? Like, who's doing this? And it's like, well, AOL's like, if they're going to keep paying us, we're going to keep taking it. And that's exactly what's happening here. Some people are actually paying. And so Consumer Reports did a study of the 5 biggest credit score apps. And they found that some of these apps are charging folks to find out their credit score, right? Many of them offer like a limited free model. You can get like a little bit of access for no money.
You get a little taste of the score, but not the full score.
And then they charge like $20 to $40 a month if you want the whole kit and caboodle. And that is a lot of money. So here's the thing. Access to your credit score has never been easier. Mm-hmm. Access to getting your credit score for free. So we would say don't pay for it ever. And yeah, your credit card likely gives it to you for free. If not, get it from a place like Credit Karma or Credit Scorecard in particular. And we'll link to both of those in the show notes. But know this, the score you're getting, it's not perfect. It helps you know the ballpark you're in. There are so many different scores that it's hard to get one perfect score that your lender is going to see. But it's still important to know your ballpark score and to check in on it regularly. And so, yeah, that's why those are our two favorite sites for checking without having to pay a dime ever for it.
Yeah, it's faulty thinking to think that, well, if I pay for the service, they're going to give me the most accurate information, because in the end, it's just, like you said, it's one of many because there are so many different credit scores that are out there. And even still, a credit score, I mean, it's not all that accurate. It's like going to an online doctor calculator or something like that, and they're like, hey, give me your height and your weight, and I'm going to tell you how fit you are. It's like, I mean, that's a good place to start, I guess, but there are so many other factors that go into knowing whether or not you're healthy, whether or not you have other underlying health conditions.
Yeah, it's like, you don't know how many McRibs I ate last night, all right?
It's just like, oh, I weigh this much, but how much of that is muscle? How much is fat?
Right.
And because there are so many different scores, they vary wildly. The scores you get on Credit Karma probably won't be the same as the one you'll get from like Credit Sesame or from a credit bureau like Experian. For instance, one that we've all heard of, FICO, it's the most recognized company in the space. And over the years, they've had over 50 different variations of their score. It's just crazy.
It's like, I'd like my FICO score, please.
And they're like,
which one would you like?
It's like they're all variants.
TCBY, but for your credit score.
And so we just want you to keep that in mind. And also, by the way, it's important, another note that we want you to keep in mind. You're coughing up a lot of personal information when you sign up for any of these apps in order to get your credit score. Free access to your credit score is awesome. We love getting things for free, but it does come with a cost. And that is your data that you're giving up. And so again, we'll make sure to link to that story to Consumer Reports in our show notes if you want to have more information on that. The best places to find your credit score. But like Joel, like you mentioned, I think the easiest and best place to do it, almost all credit cards these days on their main dashboard have a link right there, and they'll take you to a version of your credit score. And for most of our purposes in our day-to-day, that is going to be good enough to figure out where our credit stands.
Yeah, and if you don't want to cough up Facebook levels of information to one of these apps, then you're right. Yeah, the credit card company is a better place to go, one that you already have a relationship with. And that's why Credit Scorecard, literally, it's my favorite. Like, Credit Karma is great too, but you're going to be giving up information if you go to Credit Karma, and if you go to creditscorecard.com, you're doing business with a credit card company. It's just different, and they're not pitching you nearly as many things. I think that's, you're right, that's the best place.
And oftentimes, I mean, the credit card companies, like, they already have your information,
right?
So let's keep that information within this sort of walled garden right here. We don't need to, you know, throw that information over to somebody else as well.
Right, for sure. So, all right, well, that's going to do it for today's Friday Flight. If you want show notes with links to the stories that we mentioned, well, you can find those up on our website at howtomoney.com.
That's right. And we hope everyone has a great weekend. On Monday, we're excited. We've got a great episode lined up for you. We're talking with our friend Carl, aka Mr. 1500. We're going to talk about why it is that he goes by that name. One quick hint, it has something to do with financial independence. And so we're going to be talking about the FIRE movement. We're going to be talking about real estate. We're really excited for you to hear that episode here on Monday.
No doubt. All right. Well, that's going to do it, Matt. So until next time, best friends out.
Best friends out.